How do you find that that courage, you know, to start something really challenging when that little voice inside, that deep self-doubt, just whispers you can't change? Maybe leaves you feeling completely hopeless. Today we're diving right into that question. It's really central, isn't it? Especially when you're trying to abandon patterns that just aren't serving you. Welcome to the Deep Dive. This is your shortcut to getting informed, hopefully with a few surprising facts and maybe just enough humor to keep you listening. Every Deep Dive like this one is tailored for you, our listener, to help you pull out the most vital insights from some pretty fascinating material. And today we are setting sail into Chapter 29 of the RAFT to Freedom program, The Focus, Confidence as a Defense. We'll be exploring what it really means to cultivate that kind of robust inner trust, particularly when you're dealing with patterns of craving and avoidance. Now, just a quick reminder, the RAFT to Freedom program, it's this comprehensive guide. RAFT, that's RAFT, stands for Recognize, Abandon, Freedom, and Train. Today, we're firmly in the A stage, abandoning those unhelpful cravings and compulsions. And we're looking at confidence as one of the five defenders. These are like essential inner qualities that really strengthen your journey. Our mission today, to unpack confidence, not as some kind of blind belief, but as a really vital, active force that helps you steer your raft towards safety. Let's maybe start with some inspiring ways people have talked about this. Stephen Batchelor says, to be a person of faith is to be a person whose life is illuminated from within. There's a guiding light. It speaks with utter clarity.
Mm-hmm. Like a foundational value.
Exactly. And Martin Luther King Jr., he put it so beautifully, faith is taking the first step even when you don't see the whole staircase.
Oh, that's powerful.
It's in it. And Sharon Salzberg adds, faith is the willingness to take the next step, to see the unknown as an adventure, to launch a journey.
Mm. So these are really potent ideas setting the stage. When we talk about confidence, or seha, as it's called in the Buddhist tradition, we're clearly not just talking about, you know, crossing your fingers and hoping for the best. What's the real core of this quality within the RAFT program?
Well, what's really interesting here is how the RAFT to Freedom program defines it. Confidence is seen as this vital inspiration. It's motivation, it's trust, and it's the growing conviction. But, and this is key, it's rooted in direct experience. It is explicitly not blind belief.
Right. Direct experience, not just wishing. Exactly. Think of it as the direct antidote to that deep self-doubt, that sense of hopelessness that can really creep in when you're caught in those patterns of craving and avoidance. You know, those thoughts, I can't change, or nothing works, they can be totally paralyzing. Confidence is what actively counters them.
So it's less a passive feeling and more like an active, an internal stance against those inner critics.
That's a great way to put it, an active stance. It's the willingness to believe, genuinely believe, that freedom is possible, that the path you're on is trustworthy, and really importantly, that you have an inherent capacity to heal and grow. That's what directly supports abandoning those harmful cravings and compulsions. It acts as a really powerful defense against what the program calls immobilizing doubt, that paralysis we feel when we're just stuck in uncertainty.
Okay, and how does this tie into the whole RAFT metaphor? I mean, how does confidence actually help us, you know, launch the raft?
Good question. So if you think of the RAFT program's teachings and practices, the mindfulness, the ethics, all of it as the design and the materials of your raft, then confidence is that fundamental belief that reaching the safe shore is actually possible. It's the trust you place in the raft itself, in its structure.
Trusting the vessel.
Precisely. Without that trust, you, playing all the roles, captain, navigator, crew, you just wouldn't commit, would you? You wouldn't even start building the raft, let alone push off into potentially dangerous waters. You just stay stuck on that perilous shore, convinced it's too risky or maybe impossible.
Right. You wouldn't take the first step.
Exactly. As the Buddhist teacher Bernate Fontclose puts it really nicely, confidence is the inspiration, the motivation, and the commitment to practice. It's what makes you actually pick up the oars and start rowing.
That makes a lot of sense. You know, it's easy to think of confidence as this fixed thing, like you either have it or you don't. But based on the program, it sounds much more dynamic, like a quality that actually shifts and grows with you.
That's a really important point. It's absolutely not static. The program outlines three distinct forms, or maybe phases, each building on the previous one. It guides you from maybe just an initial spark all the way to this kind of unwavering inner strength. The first is called leaping faith. You could call it inspired confidence.
Leaping faith. I like that.
Yeah.
What does that look like, especially at the start of this kind of journey?
Well, at this early stage, confidence often comes from seeing other people, people who've already walked this path towards freedom. You see their lives, maybe how they're flourishing, and that offers living proof that transformation really is possible. It inspires you to believe even before you've had that direct personal experience yourself.
Uh-huh. So it's like seeing someone else do it makes it seem possible for you too.
Exactly. The analogy used is like a crowd standing before a raging river. Everyone's hesitant. Nobody dares to cross until one person just takes a bold leap, makes it to the far bank safely. Once that happens, suddenly the fear lessens, doesn't it? Others see it's possible and find the courage to follow.
It's contagious.
It really is. It's like borrowed confidence at first.
Yeah.
But then it starts to glow within you.
Okay, so you borrow that initial spark. What comes next? How does it become more your own?
That leads into the second form, clarifying faith. Or you could call it verified confidence. This happens as you actively engage with the practices, things like mindfulness, ethical living, maybe reflection, or connecting with community support. You start noticing the benefits directly, firsthand.
Like small wins.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe a little more calm settles in, or a craving arises, but it passes without you acting on it. Or you have a moment of real, deep self-awareness.
So these aren't just abstract ideas anymore. You're actually seeing results in your own life.
Precisely. These direct experiences, they're like, imagine placing a precious gem into muddy water. Slowly, the mud settles, the water clears, and the gem becomes visible. Confidence shifts here. It moves from that inspired hope to a more verified trust because it's grounded in your own lived experience. And this is exactly what Gautama, the Buddha, encouraged, actually. In the Kalama Sutta, a famous teaching, he basically told people, don't just believe things blindly. Test it for yourself. See if it leads to well-being.
Test it for yourself.
Uh-huh.
That's such a powerful, empowering message, isn't it? Especially when you're struggling with doubt. And the final stage.
The final stage is unshakable faith. This is stable confidence. Over time and with consistent practice, confidence matures. It becomes something steady, enduring. It's no longer so dependent on what others are doing or fragile when you face setbacks. It becomes a true inner refuge.
So it's not like you're naive or certain everything will be easy.
Not at all. It's not naive certainty. It's more like a grounded knowing, a sense of, okay, I've walked this far. I know from my own experience that freedom is possible. I'm not turning back now.
Like that image of a deeply rooted tree.
Exactly like that. A tree with deep roots. Storms might come, bend its branches, you know, shake it up a bit. But it can't be uprooted. Unshakable confidence sustains you through the difficult times. It protects you from being completely swept away by old habits or despair.
Wow.
The RAFT program sums up this whole evolution quite beautifully, I think. It says, confidence may begin as a spark borrowed from others, but through practice, it becomes a clear flame within. And finally, a steady beacon that lights the way for ourselves and for those who follow after us.
A steady beacon. That's a powerful image. Okay, so we've seen how confidence evolves through these stages. But let's get practical. How does this translate into like building our own raft? What are the specific areas of trust we need to focus on cultivating? What are those planks made of?
Right. And it's important to see these planks aren't separate things. They actually reinforce each other. As one grows stronger, it helps the others, creating a really stable foundation for your raft journey. The RAFT program highlights four key aspects. First up is trust in the possibility of change. That inner voice, the program, sometimes calls it Mara, like the embodiment of hopelessness. It might whisper constantly, you'll never change. Confidence begins when you just allow yourself, even tentatively, to believe that freedom from harmful cravings and compulsions is genuinely possible. Even tiny signs of progress, a single craving resisted, one compassionate choice you make, they become evidence against Mara's narrative.
So step one is just allowing that possibility to exist, even if the inner critic is shouting.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Just opening the door a crack. The second aspect is confidence in the process.
Trusting the tools, basically.
Yeah, it's totally natural to doubt, right? Will these practices actually work for me? Confidence in the process grows as you test them out, like we said, and witness the results. Within the RAFT framework, this includes things like mindfulness practices, ethical living like the five gifts, which encourage things like generosity and wise speech, maybe therapy, journaling, community support, meditation. Each practice you engage with becomes like another oar, helping you row yourself forward.
Got it. So it's about active engagement and saying, hey, this actually helps. What's number three?
Number three is self-confidence, trusting inner wisdom. This one deepens over time. Confidence evolves into a trust in yourself. You start to see your own capacity for awareness, your ability to make skillful choices, and crucially, your power to learn from experience, even mistakes. You begin to draw strength from within, realizing, okay, maybe I can do this too. It's not arrogance at all, but a clear, grounded understanding of your own potential.
A quiet knowing, maybe. And the fourth aspect.
The fourth is confidence from ethical living and harm reduction. When you live more in harmony with those five gifts, you know, principles like not causing harm, speaking truthfully, being generous, you actively reduce harm to yourself and to others.
Mm-hmm.
This directly builds self-respect. It steadies your raft and it reinforces your trust in the path you're on. Every ethical choice becomes like another strong plank, strengthening your journey and actually benefiting those around you too.
This all sounds incredibly empowering. It really does feel like confidence isn't something you just wait for. It's something you can actively build. So let's get really practical again. What are some tangible, actionable ways we can strengthen this vital quality in our daily lives?
Mm-hmm.
How do we, you know, work this muscle?
You're absolutely right. It is like a muscle. It gets stronger with use. And the RAFT program offers very practical ways to nurture it. One really powerful approach is to engage the path with curiosity. Shift the question. Instead of that skeptical, will this work for me? Try asking, okay, what happens when I actually practice this?
Mm-hmm.
Treat the RAFT practices, mindfulness, ethical living, journaling, meditation, community, whatever resonates, treat them like little experiments. Observe the results without harsh judgment.
I love that reframe. Turning doubt into like scientific inquiry about yourself.
Exactly. Another key practice is to affirm progress daily. Really take a moment, maybe at the end of the day, to consciously notice the steps you've already taken, however small they seem. These aren't just fleeting good feelings. Write them down, maybe. They become solid evidence against despair and doubt, reminding you of your capacity for change.
Mm-hmm. Building your own evidence file.
Yeah. And crucial to this is learning to gently challenge doubt and shame. When those inner voices pipe up, you can't do this, you'll fail again. Meet them with compassion, first of all, but also with gentle inquiry. Ask, is this thought absolutely 100% true? What evidence do I have against it? Sometimes just acknowledging it helps. Ah, I see you, Mara. Naming it takes away some of its power.
Right. Questioning those old automatic negative thoughts.
Precisely. Also, really trying to anchor yourself in ethical living. Every time you make an ethical choice that aligns with the five gifts, it builds self-respect. It reminds you of your capacity for skillful action, and that reinforces your inner compass.
And what about the people around us?
That's vital. Seek noble friendship, as the program calls it. Spend time with people who live with integrity, who have hope. Their presence is genuinely inspiring. It lifts you up and provides a supportive environment for your own growth.
Those connections feel so important. Now, we know even with all these great tools and practices, the journey isn't always, you know, smooth sailing. There will be storms.
Mm-hmm.
What are some common obstacles to confidence that people might run into, and how can they navigate those rough patches?
Oh, absolutely. Encountering challenges is totally natural. It's part of the process. The key is recognizing them and knowing how to work with them. That's what turns obstacles into stepping stones, right? So one very common one is just plain old self-doubt, that feeling of being completely weighed down by past attempts, past failures, or just that persistent inner voice, Mara, insisting you'll never succeed.
Yeah, that voice can be so loud sometimes. How do you counter that?
Gently. Gently notice the thoughts without automatically buying into them. This is where keeping that progress journal can be so helpful. It gives you concrete facts to answer the inner critic. You can say, okay, yes, I've stumbled before. That's true. But look, I also kept going, here's the proof right here.
Mm-hmm. Facts over feelings sometimes.
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah.
Another big obstacle is the fear of failure, which can lead to wanting to just abandon ship altogether. It's the fear that any setback means you should just give up. Or maybe that leaving the old habits behind will just be too difficult, too painful.
It's really tempting to just throw in the towel when things get hard, isn't it?
It is incredibly tempting. The way to work with this is to try and reframe setbacks. See them not as proof that you're inadequate, but as valuable lessons, opportunities to learn. Practice self-compassion here. It's crucial. Remember, the goal is progress, step by step, not some impossible standard of perfection.
Progress, not perfection. I like that. What else?
Then there's mistrust of the process itself. That skepticism kicks in. Will these mindfulness practices really work for me? Or maybe nothing can actually help my situation.
How do you encourage someone to keep trying when that kind of doubt about the path itself starts creeping in?
Again, go back to that open curiosity Gautama suggested. Approach the practices like experiments. Trust your own direct experience. Notice even the smallest shifts, the slightest bit of relief or clarity, and don't underestimate talking about it. Sharing these doubts with a trusted mentor, a therapist, or even a supportive peer can make a huge difference.
Yeah, getting it out helps.
Definitely. And finally, a really significant one. Negative influences and environments. It's hard to build confidence. It's quite fragile sometimes, especially when you're surrounded by cynicism, criticism, or just environments that don't support your growth.
That's a huge factor. It's tough to feel confident when people around you are pulling you down.
It really is. So the counter strategy is to actively, consciously seek out those noble friendships we mentioned, people who genuinely encourage you, who inspire you by how they live. Choose to spend time in environments that strengthen your intention to move from suffering towards freedom. And where possible, gently reduce time spent with undermining influences.
It's about protecting that growing flame of confidence.
Exactly. And always remember to remember, obstacles aren't roadblocks. They are part of the path itself. Every challenge you face and work through actually builds a deeper, steadier confidence, the kind that doesn't just collapse in the winds of craving or doubt. And remember, each of the five defenders' confidence, courageous effort, healing mindfulness, gathered mind, and discernment, they stand beside you, ready to support confidence whenever it gets tested.
That's really helpful. Okay, so zooming out a bit, what does all this tell us about our broader understanding of human potential? Beyond the very practical applications, what's the sort of scientific and philosophical foundation that supports this idea of confidence as a key defense?
This is where the RAFT program really connects ancient wisdom with modern understanding, which I find fascinating. If we look at neuroscience, for example, we now know confidence isn't just a vague feeling, it actively shapes our brain. Think about the placebo effect. Belief alone can trigger real physiological changes, like the release of pain-relieving opioids or motivation-boosting dopamine.
Wow. So belief has physical effects.
Absolutely. Trust is linked to the release of oxytocin, the bonding hormone. Hope engages brain circuits involved in reward and resilience. And maybe most importantly, neuroplasticity confirms our brains can literally rewire themselves through experience and practice. This gives us a solid biological basis for believing that change is truly possible. Every time we practice these skills, we're literally reshaping our brain pathways towards greater freedom and well-being.
So our efforts actually change our brain structure.
That's incredible. What about psychology? Well, psychology strongly backs this up, too. Modern psychology offers loads of support for the power of confidence and personal transformation. Albert Bandura's famous self-efficacy theory basically states that believing in your own ability to succeed at specific tasks is absolutely key to changing behavior.
Believing you can do it makes it more likely you will do it.
Precisely. Then there's C.R. Snyder's hope theory, which emphasizes needing clear goals, clear pathways to reach them, and the agency or motivation to pursue those pathways. Confidence fuels that agency. We also see it in therapy. The quality of the therapeutic alliance that trust between a client and therapist is one of the best predictors of positive outcomes. Role models, as we mentioned, build self-efficacy. And the flip side, a chronic lack of confidence often shows up as learned helplessness. So many findings in psychology really mirror this ancient understanding that confidence provides the essential inner fuel needed for practice and change.
It's amazing how modern science is catching up with ancient wisdom in a way. And philosophically, how does philosophy view this?
Philosophy often explores confidence, or faith, as a kind of courageous commitment we make in the face of inherent uncertainty. Epistemology, which is the study of knowledge, looks at how faith or trust exists alongside reason they aren't always opposed. Existentialism often talks about a leap of faith committing to a chosen path or set of values despite the lack of absolute certainty about the outcome.
Making a commitment even without guarantees.
Exactly. And secular philosophers like Stephen Batchelor, whom we quoted earlier, see faith not necessarily in a deity, but as a deep commitment to life itself, including its difficulties, which then drives ethical practice. Martin Heglin describes something similar as the confidence that life is worth living, which motivates us to care for it. This all echoes Gautama's emphasis on verifying truth through your own experience. It ensures confidence isn't just blind belief, but a trust you act upon and then validate through your own lived journey.
So wrapping things up for this deep dive, the key takeaway seems to be the confidence, this first defense of freedom we've been exploring. It's really so much more than just wishful thinking, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's that steady, verified trust. The trust you build through experience. And it becomes your first line of defense against falling into despair or getting paralyzed by doubt.
Like the sailor needing to trust their boat. before they even set sail.
Exactly that analogy. You need that trust in your raft, the teachings, the practices, and your own capacity to steer it. Without that fundamental trust, you'd never launch from that dangerous shore in the first place. But with it, you find the courage you need to face the inevitable uncertainty, the cravings, the fears. You face them with growing resilience.
And it evolves, as we discussed. That inner light Stephen Batchelor mentioned. It might start as just a tiny spark, maybe borrowed from seeing someone else succeed.
Mm-hmm.
But through your own diligent effort, through direct experience, it grows into something unshakable. A tested trust that no storm of craving or doubt can completely sink.
Yeah, every time you make a skillful choice, maybe sit with a difficult craving instead of acting on it, resist a harmful urge, or live in harmony with those five gifts. It's like you're laying down another solid plank of confidence in your raft.
It becomes this lived experience, doesn't it? Proof that the path works, that change is real, and that freedom truly is possible.
And that inner light, that confidence, it ignites your courageous effort, it supports your healing mindfulness, it helps steady your scattered mind, and it really opens the door to discernment, seeing things clearly.
For anyone listening who's keen to explore this path further, the RAFT to Freedom workbook, which we've been drawing from, is written by Dr. Catherine Jacob and Vince Cullen, and they've generously made the entire 67 chapters freely available online. You can find that at raft2freedom.org. That's raft, R-A-F-T, the number 2, freedom.org.
It's a fantastic resource.
It really is. So as you reflect on our conversation today, maybe mull over this self-reflection question. What gives rise for you to the belief that freedom is possible, even when things feel really difficult? What sparks that confidence for you?
That's a great question to sit with.
We'll leave you today with this powerful thought from Gautama. A person with confidence seeks what is skillful, associates with the wise, lives ethically, and develops wisdom.